holding towards the bottom of Nunheimed Bay is four lines from the bottom. Because he had one little piece of the model left to finish off from yesterday's Mishnah. So the Mishnah had talked about that a person makes a neder not to wear clothing what is and isn't included. And then we had Rabbi Yehuda said that actually it depends. For example, if you have a person was carrying a load of wool, for example, and he's sweating from it, and then he says a neder that I won't that wool won't come up on me, then it means he only meant it as far as carrying it, not as far as wearing it. Okay. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Kol Lefi Anoda. V'Cholo Tanya, Kate said, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Kol Lefi Anoda. What does Rabbi Yehuda mean when he says everything goes according to how you make the neder, or how the situation of the person who made the neder? Hayo Lavush Tzemer, the Hezar, if he was wearing wool and he was uncomfortable, either because the Rosh explains Hezar in the sense of just he was uncomfortable, it was a heavy, heavyweight garment. Tosis talks about that actually, but means Tosis has a gears the ruchik tzara, that the clothes are too tight on him. So either way, the point is he's uncomfortable. V'om a koinam tzemer ola alai, and he says a koinam that wool will not come up on me. Also little bit shemut a litter. Well, then the implication is that he's also to wear wool. Consider here, he's also to wear wool, and he's mutter to carry it. On the other hand, Hayaton Pishton Rizia, suppose that he was carrying a load of flax and started sweating. Va'amar Konam Pishton Oyla Alai, and he says, Konam, that flax will go on me, Mutu Lilbush also Litter. And then he would be Mutu to wear it, and he would be also only to carry it. Now, the Ran says that actually this Braisa disagrees with the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, Rabbi Huda and the Mishnah seems to be saying like this. Now, when you consider this, we can talk about two basic, the Mishnah that we just had, as opposed to the Braisa that we just quoted. When you think about it, there's two different possible ways that a person can be making a neder about Semer or Pishtim. One is just generically, there was nothing specific happening, and he made a neder that wool or linen won't come on. The other way is he was doing this is called there's no hechacha, there's no specific evidence what he meant, whether he meant wearing, whether he meant carrying it, or both. As opposed to you can have the cases that we described in the one case in the Mishnah, the two cases in the Braisa, where he was wearing it and he was uncomfortable, or he was carrying it and he was uncomfortable. There we can say there is a hechacha, there's evidence based on the situation that it means only one and not the other.
Because he was wearing it
and then he made the neder, or because he was carrying it and then he made the neder. As opposed to the case where he was neither wearing nor carrying it, and all of a sudden, just out of the blue, he says his neder. Now, so the Ran takes the view that the Mishnah is saying that where there's a hechacha, where we know if he was wearing and he was uncomfortable, then we know he only means wearing. If he was carrying and he was uncomfortable, he only means carrying. If neither, then Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah would seem to agree that that means that just you're also to wear and you're mutter to carry it.
Here you go.
Whereas in the Braisa, it sounds, since Rabbi Yehuda is mentioning both, a case where he's wearing it and a case where he's carrying it, and in both cases he specifies it means then davka, the one that he was doing and not the other, the implication is in the Braisa he would be saying that if a person were just to make a neder stam, he would indeed be also in both of them, even when there's no hechacha. Now, so it's not a stira really, but okay, you have a different opinion, you have two different understandings of Yehuda, one in the Mishnah, one in the Braisa. Therefore, what it would come out there for is that if we say, usually when we say a Mishnah versus a Braisa, we usually say the Halacha is like the Mishnah. Therefore, the Ram says it should come out that the Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda of the Mishnah. Like Rabbi Yehuda of the Mishnah. The reason why we say Rabbi Yehuda, by the way, as opposed to the Chachamim, is because the Tanakhama of our Mishnah is presumably Rabbi Meir, and usually the Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda against Rabbi Meir, yeah? So the Halacha would be like Rabbi Yehuda, but like Rabbi Yehuda of the Mishnah, not the Braisa. Therefore, in other words, if it's a specific case, if he was wearing woolen clothes and uncomfortable and makes a neder, then it means wearing, not carrying. If he was carrying and uncomfortable, it means not after carrying, not wearing. If he makes the neder stam, though, from the Mishnah, it comes...
I'm wearing.
What? Wearing is called hechacha. Then we know that he was uncomfortable because of the wearing. As opposed to, that's one or the other. As opposed to if it was neither, just out of the blue, when he's not wearing either wool, or when he's not wearing wool clothes at all, he says a neder that wool won't come on me. Then from the Mishnah, the implication seems to be he'll only be author to wear it. He'll still be mutter to carry it. That's how the Ran holds. The Rambam does not hold like that. The Rambam holds that that Rabbi Huda in the Mishnah and Rabbi Huda in the Braita are saying the same thing, and therefore, if we therefore use the implication of the Braita the same way as the Rambam did, it comes out that Rabbi Huda is saying that regardless, you always assume both of them are Asur. Only if it was a specific case, then we would say you're matir one or the other, whichever one he didn't do.
That seems more logical. Why does the Rambam choose to make a difference between
the... Because he says that the implication, the wording of the Mishnah versus the wording of the Braisa seems to be... Because in the Mishnah, Rabbi Huda is only mentioning a case where he was carrying, but he doesn't say anything about wearing, and he certainly doesn't say a case about wearing nothing at all. So therefore, the implication is that when it's nothing at all, fine. As far as carrying, you need a specific reason to ask for carrying, namely when he was carrying it and he was uncomfortable. Otherwise, there'd be no reason to ask for carrying, as opposed to the Braisa, which says differently.
So the
halacha is like the Rambam's understanding of it, or like the Rambam's understanding of Rabbi Huda, which is, therefore, that by default, you're also in both. If you were wearing and uncomfortable, you're also in wearing. If you were carrying and uncomfortable, you're also in carrying. Mishnah says, top of Nun Vav Amud Aleph, Hanoidim in Abayis, somebody makes a neder not to go into a house, Mutar Aliyah, then he's allowed to go into the attic, into the second floor. Because that's not included as part of the house. Divrei Rav Meir, V'chachamim Aliyah V'chal Abayis, where the Chachamim say, no, the attic is considered part of the house. You have to, I'm calling it an attic, but the truth is that's not really the right definition of it. Aliyah really means the second floor. Yeah, I mean, it's used just as much as the first floor. Adrabah, sometimes they would use it. It was, we find in various places. In Gemara, for example, when the Chachamim gathered in Aliyah's Beis Nitzah, whatever, it was like a place, more of a place for gathering. You could think of it sort of more like the ground floor is more like the bedrooms and whatnot, and the top floor is more like the living room and things like that. So the Aliyah, but according to that way of looking at it, but not necessarily, because you could just as well have that one person lives in the bias, one person lives in the Aliyah, common enough arrangement, just as it is nowadays. And the point is, the Chachamim are saying that the Aliyah is included in the house. But they would agree, the Ram says, that if a person were to make a neder not to go into the Aliyah, then yes, he would be mutter to go into the house. But you can argue that the Aliyah being a secondary thing is included in the house. You can't say the other way around, that the secondary thing, the Aliyah, should include the house.
Okay. So that's consistent with their previous
understanding. Another one. Yeah, so therefore it's continuing. Actually, it's not the Ram. The Mishnah says, Hanodim in Aliyah mutter b'bayis. Somebody makes a neder from the Aliyah, then he's allowed to go into the house, because that's definitely not included. Okay, so Gemara asks, Man Tana, who is the Tana of the following Braisa that describes the dinim of Nige Batim, of Saras and houses? The Braisa says, now the Pasuk says that Saras takes place the base or the bias. There's a bunch of, in a number of places, in the Pesukim over there uses the word base or bias to describe what's going on. We don't need all those words. You need one to tell us that we're talking about Saras and houses, but the rest of them, once we know we're talking about houses, those words are unnecessary, therefore they're available for various drushes. So, one bias, l'rabe tefe yitzia, one time bias comes to include an appendix, a side room of the house. A yitzia is kind of more like, it's sort of like a little shed sort of attached to the side of the house, it has a sloping roof and it's attached. It's sort of like an attached garage would be a yitzia, whatever. We find in the description of the Beis Hamikdash of the first Beis Hamikdash, a yitzia atachtona, v'ashniya, v'ashlishis. There were three layers of small rooms surrounding the heichal. That's an example of a yitzia, a side room like that that's attached to a main building. So babayis the rabbi says a yitzia. So the word babayis comes to include the yitzia. Now that's one girsa. The Ram says I don't like that girsa because, as a matter of fact, actually a yitzia is not included. On the contrary, a different braisa in Teres Konim says that if you find saras in the walls of the yitzia, it does not affect the house. So therefore, what do you mean the rabbi says a yitzia? So therefore, he prefers a different girsa, which is not yitzia but savua, a house that's painted. And the point is like this. When it comes to saras of clothes, the din is saras of clothes can only affect white clothes. Clothes that are dyed are not subject to tzaraas. So even if you have it's a checkerboard pattern, some parts are white and some parts are dark, only the white parts are subject to tzaraas, you would think the same thing should be true of houses. Nope, that's why the Rabbah says tzavua, that it comes to include also houses that are colored. And that means, by the way, whether they're colored naturally, whether they're made out of naturally colored stone, or whether you paint them. Either way, tzaraas can happen in them. Yeah. And babayis l'rabbis is aliyah, and also the word babayis comes to include an attic, a second floor. So who is the Tana of that b'risa? We have Rav Meir versus the Chachamim in our Mishnah. Amar Rav Chisda Rav Meir. That must necessarily be according to Rav Meir. Di rabbanan hamar rabbanan aliyah b'chal habayis. Because according to the rabbanan, you don't need the word babayis to include the aliyah. It's automatically included. Which in that, because if it was the Rabbanan, Ha'amir Rabbanan, Aliyah B'chal Abayis, don't the Rabbanan say the Aliyah is included in the house? Lomali Krab Abayis, so why would you need the word Abayis to include anything extra? Which, if that's the case, then it would mean that the Halacha is not like that Brisa necessarily, because the Halacha is not like Rav Meir in our Mishnah, the Halacha is like the Chachamim, therefore, by the same thing would apply over there. On the other hand, Abaya Omer, Afilu Temer Rabbanan. No, you could say that Braisa, as far as Tzaraas, is also talking according to Rabbanan. Boyakra, nevertheless, even according to Rabbanan, you still need an extra Pasuk. The Salkadai Bechamini, because otherwise you might have thought, the base Eretz Achuz Aschem, the Pasuk says, when you find Tzaraas in the house of the land of your inheritance. And we would understand that to mean, the Mechaber Ba'ar Shmei Bayis, only something that's directly attached to the ground is called a house. But the aliyah is not directly attached to the ground. It's attached to the house, which is attached to the ground. But that's the thing. You might have thought, if it weren't for that pasuk, but base, then you would think that maybe the aliyah, even according to the Rabbanan, yes, the aliyah is an extension of the house, but since, after all, it's a separate apartment of its own, and it's not directly attached to the ground, maybe it's not subject to negoyim. Maybe only the ground floor is. That's why we'd need that pasuk even according to the Rabbanan. Okay. Okay, fine. How about which of these Tanoim can we say that the following statement that Rav Huna Bar Chiya says in the name of Ula, which one of them would it go according to? The statement is as follows. Reuven says to Shimon, Bayis b'beisi ani mocheloch, a house in my house I'm going to sell you. Mareu aliyah. And he can be, if he wants, he can show him and tell him that to what happens. In other words, the Reuven says to Shimon, I'm selling you a house within my house. So then Shimon pays him money, and now Reuven, okay, so now show me what I bought. And Reuven is allowed to go and show him the second floor. He doesn't have to, Shimon doesn't have a claim. Look, I meant to have to buy the ground floor. Reuven can argue that it could have just as well have meant the upper floor. Now, the upper floor is, it doesn't have to mean, well, according to this way of looking at it, according to Ram's way of looking at it, he says it's not necessary. No, the point is that the ground floor is not as good, not the ground floor, the second floor is not as good as the ground floor. I mean, think of it nowadays. You know, when you're on the second floor, you always have to schlep up and down the stairs. The ground floor is much easier. So the ground floor is better. Nevertheless, the moicher, the seller, has the right to say what you bought is the less good thing. You're complaining that's not what you intended. The usual rule applies. Yad ba'al ashtar, yad lekeach ala taktona. The buyer has the lower hand because I'm moicher mechaber ala varaya. You want to prove that you meant to buy that I was supposed to sell you the ground floor. Then you have to be able to prove that. You can't. Then all you get is the second floor.
This is a chazaka.
Yeah, sort of a chazaka. Yeah.
In a way.
And Rashi puts it a little bit differently, by the way. When he says bayis b'beisi, when he says a house in my house, specifically, actually, that has the more reason why that should mean the attic. It means a house within my house, which is more logical. It means the attic, where you have to, the second floor, whatever, where you have to get up to it through the house, Taima da'amalei bayis shebeisi ani mercholach. So what are we saying? The only reason why he's entitled to give him the attic is because he said bayis shebeisi, which again can either mean indefinitely, it can mean whichever house within my house I want, or it can mean, according to Rashi, dafka the one within my house, namely the attic. Wait, avol bayis stam enem areo aliyah. But if he were to just say that I'm selling you a house, then he's not allowed to show him the attic. Then Shimon has a valid claim that you were going to sell me an actual ground floor house. Lamer of Meir, he again, should we say that's only according to the mayor? Because according to the mayor, the attic is not included in the house. So therefore, now according to the Chachamim, it is included. So therefore, yes, if you sell him a bias, even without bias, the basis, just plain old bias, it could just as well be an aliyah as a bias. Why not? Based on what they're saying in the mission over here, that when you make a neder, the Chachamim, yeah. And again, the answer is that Pilu Tamer Rabbanon. No, you could say that statement is also according to the Rabbanon, which means that it's a liberty hilchos, which is good. Because my aliyah ma'ula shababatim. Because what does it mean? On the contrary, exactly the opposite of what we were saying. We were saying that the word aliyah means that he can show him the attic, which is worse than the ground floor. No, on the contrary, it means that he has to show him the best possible one of the best possible one of his houses. Meaning, when he says bias lebesi, we're not assuming that it means one house within my house, or just any house that I choose. It actually means the best house out of all the houses that I own. And therefore, on the contrary, he can't get away with showing him an attic or a not so good house. He has to actually show him and give him the best of all the houses that he has.
Doesn't depend on the owner lives in the house.
No, because a person can sell the house that he lives in.
Huh?
It
says Basie.
Okay, Basie does just mean the house that I own.
Basie.
It doesn't necessarily mean the house that I own. Yeah. Okay. So the Ran and the Ran and Tosfos and the Rosh all discuss an issue that there's another Gemara that bears on this. There's a Gemara in Menachos that talks about a somewhat related topic. What if somebody says one ox among my oxen is going to be hektish? So then we say the best one becomes hektish. We say how does that fit with the statement over here about bias with AC? And we say over there that actually no. We end up saying that our initial assumption that he can show him the worst one and still claim, look, this is one house among my houses. So that Gemara comes to an opposite conclusion from our Gemara. Our Gemara was saying the conclusion is it means the best in order to make it work according to the Chachamim. And over there it's a yeah. So the Ran says like this. When you say over there, it's like this. If you say, Stam, I'm selling you a house, then there's no question it can be whatever house you want. The fact that the other person paid the money, you're entitled to give them whatever house you want. Even you say bias the basi, where even though when it comes to hektish, we say shor b'shvara, I mean the best one, but when it comes to a lekeach, it can mean the worst one. That's what that gemara would be.
Why?
Because there's a difference between hektish and because by lekeach, like we said at the beginning of our gemara, yad lekeach alafatayna.
Except for hektish?
Hektish is not a lekeach. Hektish is a different kind of thing. So in other words, when we say, when our Gemara concludes that it means he has to give him the best in order to make it work according to the Chachamim, in the end we don't need that. Based on that Gemara and Menachos, we have a different way of looking at it. The reason why he is able to give him the worst, not because the Aliyah is not included in the house, the Aliyah is included in the house, but because there he said bias the Basi, which is a special kind of situation.
Not because of
Yad HaTzayna? Well, it is because of Yad HaTzayna, because he said bias, because even though he said bias for Basi, but nevertheless, it could still...
He didn't say bias for Basi.
That's the point. If he just said bias, then for sure he could show him an aliyah, which fits with what the Chachamim says.
Even if he says
bias for Basi, where you would think, based on the story in Menachos, that it means the best, it can also mean the worst. Okay. Mishnah says, "Hanoydim in a mitzvah." Somebody makes a neder not to sleep on a bed. Mutar b'dargish. Then he's allowed to sleep or sit on a dargish. What are the dargish? We'll talk about in the Gemara. Divrei the Meir. But Chacham remember dargish b'chol mitzvah. The Chacham say no, a dargish is included in the category of a bed. On the other hand, "Hanoydim in a dargish mutar b'mitzvah." Same logic, because the secondary thing, the dargish, doesn't include the primary category of the bed. Okay, my dargish. The Gemara says, "So what is a dargish?" It is a bed of, we actually had this Gemara at the end of Moed Katan as well. because they talked about it. Some of it we're going to be talking about in connection with the Dinim of in connection with the Dinim of Avelos, and that's where we discussed them. And so Amar Ola Arsa Degada, it means a bed of good mazel. What does it mean? They used to set up in the house. They would set up an empty but well a nicely made but empty bed. It wouldn't be used for anything. For the mazel of the house, the word gada means mazel. Now, of course, you get to the question. I mean, out in the bed and gada means mazel. So how are you allowed to? You know, what does it mean? I mean, if God, the Gemara actually mentions in Shabbos, the Ran quotes it over here that if somebody says God gdi, that my mazel be mazeled for me, then that's dafei hamuri. It's a superstitious thing, and you're also to say it. So how are you allowed to set up a bed for the gada? There's a bunch of different answers. One of them is the Rosh says over here, it's based on something that we learned in Psachim. We learned in Psachim that there's a malach in charge of wealth and a malach in charge of poverty. The malach in charge of wealth is called Nakid or Nakia, Meloshin Naki, Meloshin cleanliness, and he likes clean places. So therefore, the idea is when you have a bed that's kept nicely made and clean, then that's like it shows like you're welcoming that malach to be by you, and then he'll bring wealth with him, as opposed to if you don't, then not. There's different other possibilities. There's the Shittim Kabbetis talks about that it's similar to the idea of putting out a Kisei Shel Aliyah. Also, it's like you're putting out a bed, so you're putting out a bed to honor the Malach, like you put out a chair to honor Aliyah. I know. And then there's also an idea. One of the Mefarshim says that it's to show a person. It shows when you have an extra bed that you're not using. It shows like I'm happy. I'm sameach b'chelka. Yiddishka gave me not only what I need, but even more than I need. I have enough extra to be able to set aside a bed that I don't need. And that way you're showing that you're happy with what you have, and that's also okay for bracha. Whatever it is, so you have this arsa de gada, this bed of good fortune. So then Ula is saying that's what the darvish is. So then the idea is, so again, going back to our mission, if a person makes a neder not to sleep on a bed, he's not allowed to sleep on that arsa de gada either. Okay, Amalei Rabbanan Ula, Hoditznan, how does that work with this that we learn in a Mishnah in Sanhedrin? Talks about the case where a king is an oval, one of his close relatives dies, so everybody comes to be Menachem Oval him. Now, usually the oval sits on the ground. Okay, nowadays they sit on a very low chair. A king is not derech eretz, that he should sit on the ground. Therefore, Shein Magrina, you say when they do the Suda Sabra, when they do the first Suda after the burial, Kola Om Mesubin Ala Oretz, everybody else sits and reclines on the ground, and he reclines on the Dargish. Now, if you're going to tell me that the Dargish is this Arsa de Gada, this extra bed for good fortune, so what's the logic? What's the logic? The whole year round, nobody sits on it, and all of a sudden now the king is an oval, he should sit on it. What's the logic? Maski for Ravina. So Ravina asks back, well, why not? Meat to have a boss of a yayin. Why? You can argue it's the same kind of thing as eating meat and drinking wine. The rest of the year, a person wants to eat meat, he can. A person doesn't want to eat meat, he doesn't have to. Same thing with wine. When it comes to an oval, we want to make him feel better, and therefore, dafka, we offer him meat and wine. So yes, you have things that are done specifically for his cover that are not done at normal times.
And during
you can eat meat and drink wine. Yeah, the fact that we don't eat meat and drink wine during the 9 days, that's a different thing. That's because it's an avelus for the Bais Hamikdash, and specifically it's related to the fact that we don't have the meat of the korbanos and the wine of the nesachim.
But for a regular
avelus, yes, you can. Yeah. So therefore, yeah, you could argue that yes, we make a special dispensation for the king under the circumstances because we can't have him sit on the ground, and we don't just want him to sit on a regular bed like he would the rest of the time. He's not an oval, so we compromise and let him sit on the dais. Okay, fine. So that's not such a question, but we have a different question. That if you're going to say that the dargish is the arsa de gada, you have a different thing that's not understandable. The Tanya, we learned in a braisa, when we learned in Moed Cotton that one of the things an oval is supposed to do is he's supposed to turn over all the beds in his house. And then it's a machloikus between Rambam and all the other Rishonim, whether the oval actually sleep on the overturned bed or whether he sleeps on the ground or whatever. But the idea is you're supposed to turn over all the beds. So we don't do that. Okay, so we don't do that. Well, we cover the mirrors. That's something else. We don't cover the beds. An oval doesn't cover the beds, as far as I know. I've never been in that situation, Baruch Hashem, so I'm not sure. But as far as I know, an oval doesn't. No. So the idea is, it says in Shulchan Aruch, the reason we don't cover our, there's a couple of reasons why we don't turn over our beds. One is because our beds are made differently than theirs. Ours have posts that stick up, yeah, so they when you turn it over, it wouldn't really be obvious that it turned over. Number two is also because we talked about there's an idea, there's a problem of kishuv, that the goyim, we live among the goyim, unlike in those days when most Jews lived among other Jews, the goyim are going to see that we're turning over our beds, and they're going to think we're trying to cast some spell on them or something. Unfortunately, this was far from theoretical during a good part of Jewish history. Yeah. Not necessarily just the Inquisition, but well, during a good part of Jewish history in the Middle Ages. It was, yeah. Okay. So, Elohakasha. So no, rather the kasha would be like this. You don't turn over a dargish, you just turn it upright. Now, what does that mean? So Rashi says it means that you turn it on its side. You turn it so it's standing on two legs, on the side. The Rosh says rather it means zoikfei means you just leave it upright. You don't need to turn it over b'chlal.
You leave it upright like
this. Yeah, you leave it, standing the way it normally stands. Yeah. Whereas according to Rashi, it means that you turn it on its side. Anyway. So Lohel Kefer Elazik, right? The E Amrit Arsa Degadahu. Now, if you're going to tell me that a Gargish is this Arsa Degadah, which means, again, it's a normal bed, it's a bed constructed like every other bed, it's just made from mazel. Well then, Bahatanya, don't we learn it a braisa? When somebody turns over his bed, he doesn't only turn over his own bed that he sleeps on. He has to turn over all the other beds that are in the house. So yes, if a dervish was an arsadagada, in other words, why shouldn't you turn it over? The same way as you have to turn over a bed that you're not sleeping on, same way you should have to turn that one over. Umar says, hold on, Kasha, that's not such a big question. Because you could argue that this is like a bed that's meant for putting things on. You know, they didn't have closets in those days necessarily. So a lot of times you'd have a bed that's made for putting things on. The Tanya, we learn a braisa. Yes, if it's a bed that's set aside for kelim, then you don't have to turn it over. So yeah, you could argue then that the Arsa Degada, is sort of halfway in between. On the one hand, you don't have kelim on it, so therefore you don't say according to Rashi that you can leave it straight. You do have to turn it up, you do have to turn it on its side, but you don't have to turn it completely over by virtue of the fact that it's never meant for sleeping on anyway.
So what do? You just send it a bit.
So according to Rashi, you would turn it on its end. You would turn it on its end or on its side, whatever. And according to Rashi, you wouldn't have to do anything. Ella e kasha ha kasha. So no, let's try another possibility. There's another reason why we can't say that the dagrish means arsa degada. The Tanya, we learn in the Braisa continues, the same Braisa that talked about the Kfiyas HaMitzah, that we said that a Dargish does not have to be turned over. Rav Shimon Gamliel, no, Dargish Matir Kavitah V'hu Neifel Me'elav. A Dargish, what you do is you untie the loops, and it falls down on its own. Now, the Dargish, we learned this in Menman Cotton. The Dargish Arsa Degadahu, now if a Dargish is Arsa Degadah, Kavitah Me'elav, it doesn't have loops. It's made the same as any other bed. Normal beds in those days didn't have loops, as the Gemara is going to talk about soon, how they used to construct their beds, but it didn't involve loops.
Did they put strings between the
walls? They used to weave ropes across the frame. Yeah, we're going to talk about it soon. So anyway, it doesn't have kavitin. So what is Reb Shimon Gamliel talking? Kavitin is loops. So it can't be. Can't be an Arsa Degadah, because again, an Arsa Degadah is made exactly like a regular bed. So he also Robin Omar. When Robin came from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, he said, "Shi'ulti lahum rabbanon." I asked one of the rabbanon, the Rav Tachlifa Bamar Rava Shmei, his name is Rav Tachlifa Bamar Rava, to have a shchiach b'shukah d'tzaloi. He was commonly around in the marketplace of the leather sellers. This Rav Tachlifa used to be a lot of times at the place where leather merchants sell their goods. Well, Amali, so he told me, "My dagish out of d'tzaloi." He told me, what is a dargish? It means a bed made out of, it means a bed of leather. Tzala is leather, yeah. So what they would do, in other words, is, a regular bed, again, would be, you know, you had the bed frame, as the Gemara is going to talk about in a minute, they would tie ropes, they'd weave ropes back and forth or across to make a framework, and then they put the mattress on top of that. This arsit tzala, rather, is, there were loops on the end of it, those are the loops that Rav Shimon Gamliel was mentioning. So normally you would have then that when you set up this bed, it would be sort of like a traveling bed or something. You would you take the loops and tie them to the bedpost, to the framework of the bed. When you want to take it off, you would loops of leather. So you tie them all around the framework, all around the frame of the bed, and then you'd lay on it. So now Rav Shimon Gamliel was saying, so now that we understand, so now let's go back a little bit. So first of all, when our Mishnah said that you make a net, you're not to sleep on a bed, you're not allowed to sleep on a dargish, according to the Chachamim, that's because a dargish is a kind of bed. It's just instead of a bed made with ropes and a mattress, like a regular bed, it's made with a leather thing. Second of all, as far as the king, same idea then, it means he sits on that. Third of all then, as far as Kfiyas HaMita, as far as turning over the bed, so here's the thing. Their beds in those times didn't have posts that stick up above the corners of the bed, usually, like ours do. Sometimes they did. We'll talk about that soon. But usually they didn't. Usually the top of the framework of the bed is more or less the top of is more or less where you'd actually be sleeping. So you turn it over. Then with a normal bed, you turn it over. The only thing that's in contact with the ground is the ropes. Fine. The ropes are easily replaceable. They're cheap. So if they get damaged because of the wetness, because of the moisture on the ground, big deal, you replace them. And Arsa the Tzala, the problem is that if you turn it over, the leather, without taking out the leather, the side that you lay on is going to be in contact with the ground, and it's going to rot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So therefore, the Tanakhama says you don't have to do that. Whereas Rav Shimon Gamliel says, I have a better idea. Undo the loops, let the leather fall on the ground. The side that will be on the ground will be the side you don't sleep on. It'll be the underside of it. So that gets a little damaged from the dampness. Big deal. You'll still be able to sleep on the top of it when you put it back together after shipping.
What do you do with the leather that's
around? So that's the thing. So you'd have there's a piece of leather lying there on the ground for a week. Yeah. Okay. Itmar. So now they said a discussion further about this. Ezu mitzvah ezu dargish. So what exactly is a mitzvah versus a dargish? So we have the basic definition now that a mitzvah involves ropes and a dargish involves leather. But there's a difference also in how they're put together. Amar Rav Yumya, mitzvah misargina isal gaba. A bed, what they do is they weave and tie the ropes over the framework of the bed. So if you have, you know, if this is one of the side pieces of the bed, so you have a rope, let's say, going over, you know, going around this and tied, and then stretching across to the other side and going over, etc. Dargish misarginos migufe. Whereas a dargish, what they would do is they would make holes in the bed frame, and they would tie the loops, they pack the loops in those holes and tie them on the other side.
Somewhat
more like, well, we don't have beds, we don't have mattresses like that, Mace, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A Mishnah says in Kalim, now there's a general rule when it comes to Kalim, when Kalim are able to become Tomei, the general rule is they can only become Tomei once the manufacturing of them is finished. Once they've reached a stage, we talked about this before, we have this in Beis, for example, and then here and there in various other places, that only when whatever process it is that's involved in manufacturing the item, only when that's finished or it's reached a state where it's already usable like that, then it's considered, then it's mekabel truma, not before that. So the Mishnah says, Klei Eitz Me'emesai Mekabel Truma, wooden kelim, at what point are they mekabel truma? So one example, Hamita B'Hareitza, a bed or crib, Mishi Yishufen Ba'or Adog, after you rub them with fish skin.
Arisa is what?
Arisa is a crib. Quip for babies. So when do they metabol trauma? When you rub them with fish skin. They didn't have sandpaper in those days. Fish skin was their equivalent of sandpaper. So the Bartanura on the Mishnah says actually that they would use it to remove coarse fish skin to remove so you don't get splinters when you touch it. Everybody else says that it means actually the Ran over here and all the other Mefarshim say that it means that they use a finer grade of it. Just like nowadays, of course, sandpaper to make it not splintery and finer sandpaper to make it shiny. In those days, they had different grades of fish skin. So here, the idea is you're polishing them with fish skin in order to make them shiny. Now, afterwards, you're going to take this framework and you're going to be putting ropes all around the sides of it. Why would you need to sand it and make it look beautiful anyway? You're not going to see it under all the ropes. So obviously you can't be that a regular bed is made that way either. Ella hava hamigufon. No, rather we have to answer that both kinds of bed are the mattress or whatever the framework that you're sleeping on is attached through holes in the frame. The difference is mita auli va puki bebizyani. The difference is that with a bed you just have there's slots all around. What you do is you take the ropes and pass them through the slots and tie them on the other side. So you have a knot, the thickness of the rope going through the side of the bed, the rest of it going to the other side, goes through the other end, and another knot at the other end. Yeah, and then back and forth and all like that. Daugish auli it wouldn't be individual lengths of rope necessarily. It could be one long rope that you do. You put a knot in one end, you stretch it to the slot on the other side, you put it back through, and so forth, and you go back and forth like that. Daugish auli ba'puki ba'avaksa. Whereas with a daugish, you put in and take out using loops. So what you do is the bed frame itself has loops attached to it. The leather mat that you're spreading out over there has strings attached all around the sides. You tie the strings onto the loops. You don't tie the strings directly into the bed frame. You tie them to the loops that are already tied on around the side. That's the daugish.
Whereas a regular bed,
you would be putting the ropes themselves in and out of the slots of the bed frame.
For the daggish, you just use leather.
The leather itself has strings attached to it.
Which you attach to
the loops. So again, those loops are the kavitin that Reb Shimon Gamliel was talking about. So you undo the kavitin and the leather falls down onto the ground. Okay. Another din in this connection. What if you have a two-poster bed? So now, the beds that we were talking about until now, again, are flat on top, more or less. You have the bed frame, you attach the ropes, however it is, you put the mattress directly above it, and your mattress is basically at the level of the bed frame. Now you want to have a canopy over your bed. So they have four-poster beds. You have four posts on the corners, and then you spread a sheet over that. We looked at that in Sukkah. You also have Nakwitin, which is also talked about in Sukkah, where you only have one post at each corner. And then you put a sheet and it hangs down like a tent.
Right.
It hangs down diagonally on both sides. We learned about this in Shabbos as far as the dinim of making an oil. We learned about it in Sukkah as far as the dinim of sleeping under such a thing in Sukkah. So a bed that has such an aklitim sticking out is safe for the dayo. So again, you can't turn it exactly upside down because it can't stand on the two poles. So therefore, you turn it sideways and that's enough. The halacha, as far as previous thing, as far as the dagish, is like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, that yes, you don't just leave it upright like the Rosh says, or turn it on its side like Rashi said. You actually have to undo the leather and let it fall to the ground. Rishna says, Hanodim in a year, somebody makes a neder not to go into a city. Mutali konas the tchum of shalir. He's allowed to go into the tchum of the city. But also the konas the ibura. But he's not allowed to go into the ibur of the city. Now, what's the Ibur? So what's the Ibur? There's two possibilities. Rashi says that, now, if you remember from when we learned back in Erevin about all the concepts of Tchumin and everything, we talked about like this. First of all, we said when you're measuring the Tchum of a city, what you do is you find all the, you find the shape of the city, you draw a square or a rectangle around the city so that it includes all the houses, and then you start measuring the tchum from there. So you can have, therefore, you can have the edge of the city is very ragged. You can have, like on the page of Gemara over here, imagine that this is a city. You know, you have a houses over here, empty space over here, another house over here. What you do is when you're drawing the rectangle, you draw the end of the rectangle here to include all those houses. If there were to be another house over here, you'd have to draw the side of the rectangle here, etc. So Rashi says that's what we're talking about over here, about the Ibru. This empty space, which otherwise it's not really part of the city because there's no houses in it, but for purposes of Tchumen, we include that in the measurement. Hello? So therefore, that would be called the Ibura Shalir. The Ran says, rather, that the Ibura Shalir means, we also learned there in Erevin, there's also a concept that a city has an extension of 70 and 2/3 amos, approximately. We learned about the mayor says you always do that. You always measure out 70 and two-thirds amas from the outer extremities of the city, and then you start counting the 2,000 amas for the tum. The Rabbanan say you only do that in certain specific cases, namely when you have two cities that are very close to each other, or the different cases that we had over there where you have, let's say, if you have a house within 70 amas of the city, that we consider it still an extension of the city, etc. So according to the Ram, that's called the Yibur HaShalir, the 70 amas that we give, according to the mayor, around the city before we start measuring the tchum, that's what we're calling here Yibur HaShalir.
70 amas. From the rectangle.
From the rectangle, right. Where the coin Tadashi, the Ibura Shalir would be the empty area within the rectangle that we only have there because we needed a rectangle shape there. Okay. So you're allowed to go into the Tchum, the 2,000 amas, but you're not allowed to go into the Ibur. Aval Anodim in a bias, but on the other hand, a person who makes a neder not to go into a house, also in a Agaf Belifnim, and he's also just any place from the doorstop and inward. When you close a door, we talked yesterday about a mashkoif, it's called that because the door bangs against it. So you have a typical door has some kind of frame around it that prevents the door from opening in or opening out, as the case may be, any further. That point where the door stops is called the agaf. That's the point. From there inward is considered part of the house.
Inside the mashkoif.
It depends. It depends how the mashkoif is built. But you have doors that swing in and you have doors that swing out. But whatever it is, wherever the door stops is considered the boundary of the house. Which, by the way, I mean, that's not, in other circumstances, that's not always the case. We learned in Pesachim, for example, about there's a difference in that as far as the dinim of eating kodshim, as far as eating the Korban Pesach, that the doorway is not necessarily considered part of the house, even, maybe the part that the door swings in. On the other hand, in the case of Yerushalayim, it might be different, whatever. So there you have that. But again, here you go. That's what we're going to talk about as far as Tzadas now. So as far as Lashon Bnei Adam, which is what the key thing about Nedarim, it means the doorstop, yeah. Okay, so you ask, Menolan di Iburud de Masa ke Masa Dami. How do we know that the Iburud of the city is just like the city? Amar Rabbi Yechanan b'Amakra, because the Pasuk says, Vayhi b'yosi Yeshua b'yuricha v'gomer. It happened when Yeshua was in the Haftarah of the first day of Pesach. When Yeshua was in Yericho, then a Malach comes to him, And Yeshua asks him, "Are you on our side, or are you on our enemy's side?" We learned in Eruvin a whole thing about that. But there was more here than meets the eye. The Malach was coming to give Yeshua Musar. You guys missed bringing the Korban Tumid yesterday. Now you're not learning Torah because you're so busy preparing for the siege of Yericho. So, okay, which of those Averas are you coming for? The Malach tells him, "Asa Basi, I'm coming for the one that's Negea right now, learning Torah." So right away they realize, okay, we gotta get back to learning Torah. We can't allow
before the war,
yeah. Because they were busy preparing for the war, but the Malach tells them that's not the right thing to do. Anyway, the point is, the Pasuk is saying, now this is before they went, now what happens in the following Perek is when the Eibishter tells Yeshua that you have to go surround, start walking, you march around Yericho every day, and then on the seventh day you blow the shofar and the wall will fall down. So this part in Perek Hey, when Yeshua meets Malach, he's not yet in Yericho. That's before they actually conquered the city. So my b'yirichai, ilay me b'yirichai mamash, do you mean that he's actually in Yerichai? V'akhi b'yirichai segeres and segeres. Right after that it says Yerichai was closed up and firmly shut. Nobody could go in and out because they're scared of the Jewish people. So of course Yeshua can't be in the city. Elashmamina b'yibura. Obviously he must have been in the Ibur of the city. And that's considered Yerichai. Therefore you see that the Ibur of the city is considered like the city. He was within 70 amas of the city, or again, according to Rashi, he was the city wasn't perfectly rectangular or square shaped. He's in one of those recesses, yeah. Okay, the Gemara asks, Eimah filu b'tchuma. Well, then by that logic, can't you say that he was in the tchum? Maybe he was just somewhere within 2,000 amas of Yericho. The answer is no. Haksiv b'tchum o madosim michutz la'ir. No, because when it comes to the tchum, yesterday's parasha, it said you should measure outside the city, which means that the tchum already is considered outside the city. It's not considered part of the city anymore. So Ibur here again, according to Rashi, is those blank spaces that are inside the rectangle. According to the Ran, it's 70 amas outside the rectangle. But whatever it is, that's close enough to the city to be considered part of the city. But it's Chum not.
So according to the Ran, it's 70 amas outside the
outside the right.
But you count the Chum. Yeah. And according to Rashi, it's from the reset.
Right. Then the Mishnah had said, "Hanoid min abayis, saying also elamina agaf lefnim." That with a house, you're only also from the door stop and going in. Which implies elamina agaf lachutzloy, which implies therefore that you're mutter to stand out, even if you're under the lintel, as long as you're outside the door stop, then you're fine. Mostly Rav Morisa. Rav Morisa, they have another contradiction again from the dinim of Tzaraas of houses. Pasuk says, V'yotza ha-koyim in ha-bayis, the koyim goes out of the house. Now, yochol yelech le-beit v'yaskus. So you would think, I mean, okay, he leaves the house, he goes home, and then from there he closes up the house. Now, how does he close up one house from another house? So the Ran and all the other Mephoshim over here say that what it can mean is that either that he can use a rope, that for example, so he ties a rope to the doorknob of the house that's to be closed up. He walks home, he pulls on the rope and closes the door.
Once he's in the other house.
Once he's in his back home, he reaches out through the window, pulls the rope and closes the door. Or the Rosh adds he could send a shliach, maybe, you would think. The Lechem Mishnah, I think it is, either Lechem Mishnah or Magen Mishnah, I forget, on the Rambam, brings up a third possibility. Who says it means either of the above? He says, when we're talking about closing up the house of Tzaraas, does it necessarily mean that the Kohen actually physically closes it up and like puts a lock on it and nobody's allowed to go in? Or is it just that it's a declaration, the same way as the person who has Tzaraas? When it says, when a person who has Tzaraas, when the Kohen is masked, it doesn't necessarily mean he quarantines him for a week. It can mean he declares, you're in Hesker. So the same thing with the house over here, it could be just the Kohen makes a declaration. So then you could think it means he goes home and makes that declaration. Anyway, no. Talmud Lomer El Pesach HaBayis. No, the Pesach says he should go to the doorway of the house. E El Pesach HaBayis Yochel Yam Taksa Mashkev V'Yaskev. Fine, if it says by the doorway of the house, maybe you should stand under the lintel and declare it Mufker and close it. Talmud Lomer Nabayis. No, the Pesach says from the house, Ad Sheyetzev Nabayis Kula, which means only when he goes out of the house completely. Okay, it's that Omer Tzad HaMashkev V'Yaskev, which means he has to stand next to the lintel and close it up. So he can't actually be under the lintel. He has to actually be outside of it. Yeah. And by the way, the Gemara mentions the rest of the Braise. It's not directly in the Gemara, but the Gemara brings the rest of it just in order to finish it off. How do we know that after all, B'di'evit, if the Kohen did go home and then closed up the house with a rope or whatever, or he did stand under the lintel and close it up, that B'di'evit is considered a valid Hesker? No, the Pasuk says he should close up the house, meaning no matter what. Al-Hatkhila, he should do it. But after all, as long as the Hesker is a bias, that's the key thing. So the point is, we see that he can't stand under the lintel. If he's under the lintel, it's still considered he's in the house, and he has to be the yotza min habayis. So how do we say it? So how are we saying over here that you can stand under the lintel of a house that you made a neder not to be in? So okay, the Gemara could have, of course, answered that there's a difference, you know, lashon Torah versus lashon bnei Adam, because the Nidarim Hal Chacha lashon bnei Adam. The reason why it doesn't, with this and with a number of other things, also on Amud Aleph, when we were trying to bring a proof from the dinim of Nidarim, the reason is, Mepharshim say, there's a couple of things. One of them is, when we say that we go according to Lashon Bnei Adam, but what if the Lashon Bnei Adam itself is not so clear? Sometimes people use you inside the house to mean actually inside. Sometimes they can include that you're under the lintel. Same thing with the bias and the aliyah. Some people would use aliyah as included in the house, some not. So therefore, you have to fall back on Lashon Torah. The other thing is, Ron pointed out a block or two ago, and different other Mepharshim point out, that all of these, you know, we're talking about in a time when everybody spoke Lashon Kodesh. The Mishnayot are written in Lashon Kodesh. So a person uses the word bias, for example, so okay, we have to look at what it means in Lashon Bnei Adam, or if not, we fall back to Lashon Torah. What about if you're in a place where your common language is not Lashon Kodesh? You're in a place where they speak English. If a person were to say, I'm making neder from a house, fine, you have to look at Lashon Bnei Adam, what's included in the house. But if a person were to say a neder from a bias, that's when we would have to fall back to Lashon Torah. Because there is no Lashon Bnei Adam to use, because not a Lashon Bnei Adam in this place.
So here in English, we have to request Lashon
Torah. That's the idea, yeah. If the person makes the neder using the Lashon Kodesh word, yeah.
And in Israel.
In Israel, it would be, yeah, then it would be Lashon Bnei Adam. Okay. So the Gemara says, shiny, gavid bias, it's different by a house with Tzaraas, it's different min habayis, because the person doesn't just say he should go out of the house. It says he should go out from the house. Which means to add that he has to actually go out of the entire thing that could possibly be considered the house. So therefore, yes, by there you have a special situation that you have to leave even the area under the lintel. But when it comes to Nedarim, Lashem Ne'adam, we can stick with the idea that the house itself means everything, is only everything from the doorstop inward.
Not
the lintel. And the Ran adds, by the way, one more detail. What if the other way around? The Mishnah doesn't talk about what if a person the other way around were to make a neder that he's going to stay within a certain house. Then it would be the reverse of our Mishnah. It would be he's only allowed to stay inside the doorstop. He's not allowed to stand under the lintel, for example, because that's the reverse of what that's considered outside the house. Yeah.